Good morning, everybody, and thank you for the invitation to share some reflections about the Irish OGP process with your new network. And I hope those observations will help you as you begin your deliberations today and beyond. I want to give a brief overview of our process. I won't labour it, it would take too much time, but mainly to focus on some of the lessons and the learning that I have personally taken from our experience, both the mistakes we made and the things that work well, so that may help you maybe to avoid those particular pitfalls and benefit from some of that learning. Time is a big issue for this process. As you will see from the slide, the timeline for our first OGP plan was pretty tight, just over a year from government sign up to when the first action plan was submitted. The civil society consultation was even tighter in terms of time. We had a 3-month period. We began with a public consultation. We didn't begin with an established forum, and that brought its own difficulties and its own possibilities. We had 3 public meetings with work going on around those in thematic working groups, outside those meetings, both online and offline. And these meetings generated a huge number of proposals from civil society for the nascent OGP plan. A smaller group then emerged, the Civil Society Forum, which continued to work on the proposals. And from that came a joint working group, which sat down to negotiate with government, with joint chairs, and I was the joint chair for the civil society group. All the deliberations were captured online, and much of the discussion was in real time. And this was a way of modelling the open ethos of open government. But I can tell you it was pretty challenging, particularly for Neanderthals like myself, who were trying to take account of feeds coming in from outside the room, and we were trying to have deliberations and reach decisions. And it was also particularly challenging for the traditional culture of meetings with officials for whom things don't go outside the room until everything is agreed, as it were. So that kind of new ethos was a learning curve for lots of us. In terms of the first national plan that emerged, there are some features of it that I think may be worth mentioning to you. It focuses, not surprisingly, on 3 themes: open data, citizen participation, and governance and accountability. And there were a mix of actions, and I think that's worth considering as you look at where to pitch your energy in terms of linking into the UK plan. There were actions at national and local government level. Participatory budgeting nearly collapsed us. The civil society group actively pushed for participatory budgeting. The official side, using the same rationale that your minister spoke about this morning, representative of government, pushed back. And in the end, I suppose, we resorted to that traditional way out, the feasibility study. And that's what went into the action plan. Some of the actions are aimed at securing longer-term change by building capacity and perhaps changing culture, as Felicity mentioned, such as training for public servants, and hopefully by helping to bring about some culture change in that way. I think it's interesting that the civil society wanted the plan to be citizen-focused more so than customer-focused. And I wish we had more time to discuss that particular sort of nuance, because I think it is really significant. We didn't want to exclude actions to enhance service quality, which is really important. But there is a distinction and a question of where this effort overlaps with, say, public sector reform considerations. Many of the actions included by government were already in the pipeline in some form, and this generated some cynicism on the part of civil society that the government hadn't shifted to new ground or new commitments, and I'll come back to that. Some features of the process that might be of interest to you. Joining OGP was a civil society initiative in the first place. There were some key individuals who were passionate and knowledgeable and made the case, and the proposition was taken up by the Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform and senior officials. And I think this was an essential coincidence of civil society and government interests with champions in both parties. And I think without strong commitment from both, the process is unlikely to thrive. Another feature was the rich diversity of civil society participation. I think that stems from the fact that we started with an open process and inviting people in. There were organisations and individuals. People came from their interest in legislative initiatives such as freedom of information and whistleblowing, groups strongly invested in the transparency issue, in open data, in citizen participation, and a very strong lobby, and I don't use that word in any pejorative sense, from the environment groups, who were particularly interested in promoting the Aarhus Convention, which some of you may have come across. This made for a very rich mix of people and perspectives. I remember thinking, I don't know anyone in the room, and I thought that was great. This diversity is a real strength, but there's also a risk of fragmentation and the challenge of building a coherent voice and the time for those people coming together for the first time to build themselves into a coherent group to engage with government. The tight timeframe posed real difficulties for civil societies where most people had full-time jobs as well as engaging in this work. However, who knows if we had had more time, would that have helped? There's a case for making a start and getting on with it. Freedom of information was a key driver. New legislation was in the course of preparation and there was passionate debate. And again, like participatory budgeting, it was an issue on which we nearly fell out. It did dominate, but it also cemented civil society around a very strong platform. And ultimately, there was a fairly positive outcome where civil society advocated strongly for no upfront fees for FOI and managed to secure that change from the minister. And we hold that up as one of our key successes. Just to draw this together in terms of the potential benefits, what do we see now at this juncture, which is very early in our time as a group working on open government? I think the proof of those benefits have to be realised when we see how does the implementation actually unfold. But the potential benefits are there. The commitments in the plan are public. They're serious. And there's a high level of national and international accountability. So even if government commitments were already in the pipeline, I would not regard that cynically. I think having them in the OGP plan gives them added impetus. OGP brings a clear focus to the accountability agenda and makes it visible and coherent, with joined-up civil society movement looking out for it, rather than having it dispersed across government departments and individual civil society work. And it can lay the foundation for a new kind of partnership with government. The challenges, there are plenty of challenges. One of these was being clear about the boundaries of what this is. What is it? What isn't it? Is it the same as the public sector reform programme? Is it different? And that's something that you have to work out. What does this do to add value to other work that's going on? And what is different in its particular focus on open government and transparency? Working out who is civil society for this purpose is always challenging, but for us bringing new voices on board was particularly important. And our process was open to the private sector. Anybody could get involved. And there was also a separate consultation with private sector interests. I think it's really important for this to be a whole of government project, even though led by one department or minister. And another challenge is making sure that it isn't an elitist project, but is a project that has value for all citizens. And that will take time to build that bridge between citizens at large and the language and terminology and thinking of open government. But we need to find a way of engaging the wider public. Open data was and is a big focus for us. I, like many others, struggle with the material around data sets and licences and all that techie talk. And those of us who struggle with that have to try and keep up. But the open data people also have to try and build a bridge to keep bridge to the non-techies too and to the public at large, because open data really matters to everybody. Finally, pulling some of those thoughts together in terms of making it work, what did we learn? For civil society entering the process, the key learning for me is that you need to be satisfied that there's real government commitment and at least one champion who can build a strong constituency of support in government. You need to extend the civil society voice to new players and invest time in your own internal dialogue, particularly when you bring new voices on board. Otherwise, you will risk being fragmented and incoherent when you go into the conversation with government. I think there's a case for disrupting, in a very positive sense, the established patterns of the community voluntary sector government relationship that tend sometimes to be structured around an established purchaser provider relationship. And sort of how do you get to move that into a different kind of space if that's where you're starting? From a government point of view, government needs to give evidence of its commitment and get evidence of civil society commitment. But it must also offer leadership to invest in bringing a whole of government involvement, because one department or minister can't make it work. Just a couple of points in relation to the partnership when you do get together. And looking back on our first cut at this, it would have been better if we had been able to engage with government in some kind of exploratory dialogue to build the relationship and build trust, rather than working separately for a long time on separate proposals, which drew us into a negotiating stance and a win-lose place too soon. I would say use all your expertise. Here in this room, there are people with skills in change management, in advocacy, in citizen engagement, in organisation strategy. Our civil society group had those too, but we didn't draw on them. We had these silos of expertise and we just focused on the content. So I would say, use those skills and mind the process. I think it's worth focusing on where to put your energy as you begin, what to bid for to maximise the impact. Think about levers of longer-term change as well as short-term gains. Think about proposals that could build capacity and help to change culture, perhaps in key areas like health, education and environment. And of course, implementation is the big buzzword. Think ahead to implementation. Finally, the big why. Getting back to why do this, we all know why we were invested in this fundamental value and need for open government. Beyond the detail of actions and action plans, what we're about is the democratic project. This is pretty archaic language, and that's excusable because it's over 200 years old, but I think some of the thoughts are as relevant as they as if they were said today from James Madison, the fourth US president. In framing a government which is to be administered by men over men, the great difficulty lies in this. You must first enable the government to control the governed, and in the next place oblige it to control itself. And the second one, it'll be of little avail to the people that the laws are made by men of their own choice if the laws be so voluminous that they cannot be read or so incoherent that they cannot be understood. So there's something there about accessible information, I think. The OGP, I think, takes up the challenge in these quotes but moves them from the language of control to collaboration between the citizen and the government, to whom, after all, the citizen has delegated power. As Peter said earlier, there can be a tension between what the government sees as its right or duty to govern and the citizens' right to exercise their influence, and we had to work with that tension. Arguably, I think, effective forms of accountability, genuine transparency and citizen engagement are the means of managing that tension and drawing government and citizen into a closer partnership to the benefit of all, and I would feel that that is a prize worth working for, and open government offers a means to that end. Thank you.